Macmillan Audio presents The Exiled Fleet by J.S. Dewis. Read for you by Andrew Iden and Nicole Zanzarella.
Chapter 1. Motherfucker, you better work! Kevlon slammed the access panel shut. Sweat stung his eyes, and he wiped away the moisture, slicking his overgrown hair to his forehead. Days since he'd started this phase of the project. 23. Times he'd recalculated, reconfigured, or rebuilt this single fucking subsystem. 14. Patience? 0. This had to be it. It had to work this time, or he'd give up and activate it without any stupid core stabilization, then stand back and watch the damn thing supernova. Who tried to build a star aboard a fucking spaceship anyway? Bloody void. He tapped the black Nexus band on his wrist, and an orange holographic display slid into the air over his forearm. He found the menu, labeled with a hashed half-circle, a spiked teardrop, and an inverted triangle. A Viator phrase that unnervingly translated to anti-explosion box. He selected the icon, and it produced an infuriating sync-in-progress meter. He waited for the bar to fill, scratching at the few centimeters of blonde growth along his jawline. He'd given up months ago and just rode the stubble wave right into a beard, which had arrived peppered with more gray than felt reasonable for 28. But there was no time for shaving when there was a perpetual jump drive to build. Well, invent. Jump drives required solar energy to function, usually amassed by panels on the hull while a vessel went about its business in a solar system. But they weren't in a solar system. They weren't even in a galaxy, which meant there wasn't a single star even remotely close enough. So, naturally, the solution had been to build one. In the damn ship. For the last 6 months, every ounce of his effort, day or night, sleeping or waking, had been focused on finishing this ridiculous perpetual jump drive. This singular task, the only thing that could get all 4,000 rescued sentinels to Karangate before they all died of thirst or starvation, or the divide finally drove them all mad and the typhus became one giant murder party. As usual, no pressure. With a placid beep, the sync completed. The screen flashed red, and his Nexus band blurted out a negative tone. He clenched his teeth, suppressing a low growl. Ever the masochist, he tapped the activation again. Again, a docile negative tone. And again, nothing. He quirked a brow at the display. Strangely, it showed no error code. Maybe the wireless controls were acting up again. It hadn't been the easiest task of Puck's career to get the Legion software to interact nicely with the Viator-conceived systems. He'd have to check the primary control terminal to be sure. Kevlon closed the menu, then headed up the slanted passage and out of the Rector's shell into the hangar bay. Comparatively cool air chilled his sweat-slicked cheeks as he stepped onto the metal walkway. A framework of scaffolding ringed the outside of the 20-meter diameter orb, allowing access to the dozens of systems required to make the monstrosity work. The reactor's components weren't nearly as accessible as they'd been in the versions aboard the dark energy generators, mostly due to the exorbitant amount of improvisation he'd had to do. But hey, he wasn't an ancient alien species with millennia of research and apparently endless resources at his disposal. He was simply a guy with a degree in astromechanical engineering, which somehow meant that this was in his wheelhouse. Most days, he just felt like a guy with a few different types of wrenches and way too much responsibility. The whole thing was really absurd. Kevlon headed around the arc of scaffolding toward the reactor's anterior, which faced out into the large empty hangar, Bay F9, now pragmatically known as the Reactor Bay. Though at least 80 meters square, it was modest compared to what a behemoth capital ship like the Typhus had to offer. Easily the smallest of their dozens of hangars, and
Sample complete. Ready to continue?